Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Working Class on DeerCast. I don't even know what episode this is, but Dana Pace in the house.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, man. You are our resident, for people on DeerCast who don't know you, you are our resident shed antler guy at Working Class Bowhunter, and you're also the antler carving guy at Working Class Bowhunter. And I guess now you're also the traditional bowhunting guy too, along with Shad and Scotty Sullivan.
Yep, I dabble in everything.
Yeah, so it's only fitting that we had Shad on, we had Scotty join, we had Snortwee Scotty, which is like his twin brother, and then now we got Dana Pace.
I'm happy to be here.
You seem
those are some big shoes to fill there.
I mean, Shad's maybe. Scotty's.
Yeah, Snortwee's.
He's there.
He don't care.
He thinks his shoes are real big, and they're not. Man, so for people that listen or follow the Working Class Bowhunter, like our regular series, they're familiar with you, you know, especially if they've listened for a long time. You've been on that podcast several times, and it's always about shed hunting primarily, because it's the way we base on how good our shed season is going with our crew is how many have we found compared to Dana. So I don't know if that's a good
thing.
And
I don't find as many as I used to, so competition's getting stiff out there. Well, and when you have a whole family that shed hunts too, you know,
yeah,
you rack up some numbers, but you personally don't find them all.
I'd tally that into your personal numbers, right? Yeah. It still counts.
Yep.
So let's talk shed hunting, right? Let's just start with that. Does that work?
Because that works.
It's about that time. People are thinking about shed antlers. People are already finding shed antlers.
Yep.
But when this releases, it'll be more in the prime of like wanting to go shed hunting.
Yep. That's when I'll probably start kicking it off pretty hard.
We've done this on the regular WCB platform a little bit,
yep,
but I'm going to nail you down to the first day of shed season. Oh. What day would it be? Give me a 5-day buffer within that
5-day buffer. I would say Valentine's Day.
That's fair. Okay.
And I would think that, you know, like all areas are different, but, normally like 40-45% has dropped by then. I mean,
still a pretty fair amount, right?
By my cameras that I'm, you know, here in late January, I've only had a couple deer drop, and they're younger deer. So none of the bigger deer have dropped yet, but, and you know, now I used to be, as soon as deer season ended, I was full on shed season.
Just right away, right?
Right
after.
Away, because I didn't know what to do with my hands. You know, I was just, I had to be out doing something.
Yeah,
I
had the itch.
But
do you feel like that helped or hurt you in finding sheds?
So I feel like I still find the same amount every year. you know,
regardless,
I average
as if you do that or wait until the 14th, the
15th. Yeah. So I feel like I'm not stressing the, they're easier to find if I leave them be. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not in there pressuring them, pushing them around, you know, they get comfortable and they'll shed in their normal areas, but they'll be more conjugated and easier to find. The sheds will be closer together.
Do you think that is like the number one mistake a shed hunter does, is pressure an area too hard and that kind of disperses deer?
It has a lot to play into it. You know, it's, I always say, you know, the guys that are going out now, I don't bag on them because I used to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, your neighbors are going to be happy that you're out looking for them now.
Yeah. Cause they're jumping the fence and dropping on the sheds on that side.
Yeah. It's just, you know, personal preference now. You know, I used to walk a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I was putting in 300-400 miles a year walking, but that was shed hunting 5-6 days a week, you know, just hitting stuff that I had already hit.
Just to check the one you might've missed or a different angle or something like that.
Different lighting, you know, sunlight plays a huge factor into it.
That's something we, as in our podcast crew, learned from talking to you on the past shed hunting episodes, is like different angles, like what lighting, and then like grid search an area, because you might walk past something but see it from a different angle, or a tine looks a different way.
Like for instance, cornfields, we all know cornfields are hard to walk. It, you know, even on a, especially on a sunny day,
it's hard
to pick up an antler in that. My go-to approach for cornfields, if I can, is I'll wait until mid-March or April, mm-hmm. when the antlers have had a chance to sun bleach a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And then walk it on a cloudy day.
On a cloudy day. Because you don't have the sun blending antler with corn stalks?
Yep. The antler will stick out. It's, you know, it's a lighter color than corn stalks are. Mm. You know, it's more of a bone white color by then.
Right.
But I've had huge success doing it. You know, when I first started, I used to just go hit cornfields and come up with nothing, mm-hmm. you know, and over
walking by them and shit.
Yeah. It's, you know, for instance, you know, we had went out and planted a shed, not really planted a shed, but threw a shed out for my son to find. Mm-hmm. And he was standing 4 feet from this antler for 10 minutes and he could not see it. It was a bright sunny day, right around noon. You know, and it just goes to show you that you got to have the right lighting when you're walking, you know, cornfields or.
So save your cornfield and beanfield shed hunting for, if you're going to do it on a sunny day, do it the last hour of daylight, pretty much.
That too. Beanfields are a little bit different, but they still cast shadows depending on if they're standing beans. Obviously, if they're cut beans, you can see across them and you'll see tines sticking up. But
yeah.
I would say like standing beans or even grass, you know, in your CRP areas or waterways.
Yeah. One tip that you gave us back, I mean, I think one of the first shed antler episodes we did, you know, I think the problem with shed hunting too, is as I'm thinking of this, is like when we interviewed you, we wanted the secret to find all the sheds like the first time. And you were basically like, well, listen guys, that's not how this works.
It's not, you know, deer, depending on food sources, you know, your crop rotation, they'll shed in different spots, mm-hmm. but after you put your time in on these properties, you get to know where the deer bed when it's beans, where the deer bed when it's corn, you know, because mm-hmm. they'll, you know, come late season, they're off the beans again and starting to work back into corn when you're looking into mid-February, March, they're hitting corn pretty hard again.
Yeah.
And if you don't have corn and you got beans, well, you know, you gotta change your strategies because they're going to be bedding in different spots or even feeding in different spots. And
yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
I always remember you saying find the grass.
I find the grass.
What does that mean though, first of all, before we start to break that down in like a general term?
So
a lot of this we've already covered, but I think it's just important to talk about it again, especially like on the DeerCast platform and like the time this episode's going to go out. So fitting.
My favorite shed hunting topography, if you call it, would be grass or CRP or mm-hmm. waterways, buffer strips, just because a deer will feed throughout the night in those big crop fields, but every couple hours they'll bed mm-hmm. and they'll try to bed in spots where they're out of the wind, you know, sit there and I don't know if they're processing their food or whatever, but they don't
chewing their cud.
They're chewing their cud. they don't spend all that time on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to find those nighttime
holes,
bedding areas. Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, this time of season, there's a lot of, for us, there's been a lot of snow on the ground, ice throughout all the way to March.
Yeah.
Those grass fields tend to hold less snow.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll bed in those because it's a little bit warmer to bed in, you know, that's insulated.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I know whenever I hit like a certain grassy area or like CRP and you hit like where the CRP grass gets a little lower.
Yep.
I don't know why, like it feels like there's going to be an antler. It feels bucky for
antlers. It does. And to go along with the grass thing, I don't know, we've all watched deer bed in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
When they go to lay down, a lot of times if they're tired, they just flop down. When they flop down, that jolting of their body will knock antlers loose or at least rattle them just a little bit where it gets to where it's uncomfortable on their head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they'll want to get rid of them.
Wow, that's a good point. I never thought about the flop.
Yep.
Kind of like an old dog.
Exactly.
Would lay down. Yeah.
It's not as much flop as when they jump a fence and that jolt of them coming down. Yeah, but, you know, fence crossings are really good spots to find antlers.
And they're easy to check.
Super easy. You know, you can check them. You don't even have to walk them. You can, you know, if you got a UTV or four wheeler.
Yeah.
Those are the easiest ones to check.
That's what I did with my daughter last year, like on the Ranger. I'm like, oh shit, there's a shed, you know, and then I let my daughter get out and grab it.
Yep. It's,
and then we found one, you know, my daughter at that time was not even two yet. And she found her first on a path that was mowed, an old shed that'd been hit by a mower, like on her own, found it, like legit found
that's
it.
That's awesome.
So I was like, yes, I got it saved as our first shed, you know.
Don't ever get rid of those ones. Those ones will, the memories will last forever on those.
Yeah. And then I was holding her and then found a pretty decent match set, like while holding her, which is just crazy.
Yep, that's,
I suck at shed hunting, Dana. So I'm the guy that would walk like everything. Cause I'm like, man, if I just walk everything there is, I'll find them. But then I get burnt out.
The thing is like, if you walk everything, it doesn't mean you've hit it right.
Yeah.
Cause if you walk it one way, you still got to, for me, I go back in and I walk it the opposite direction because you'll catch, I'm not looking for whole antlers. I'm looking for pieces of antlers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like when you're driving down the road and you see antlers laying in people's yard and stuff like that. You know, hunters that have done it for years and years and years, you can pick those antlers up, right? Oh, there's a deer. You know, there's an antler laying in their yard. Or, you know, that's the way it is with shed hunting, too.
I don't have that. I don't have that. Like, I always try to, I think of you every time I shed hunt. I think all of us do. And when I'm walking, I'm like, what would Dana do? How would Dana look at this ground? And I just haven't mastered it yet, and I don't know if I ever will. I want to, but I've gotten lazier because time doesn't allow me to shed hunt. So like I just hit the areas I'm like, the percentages of an antler being here are greater than over there, so I'm gonna walk that and ignore that other spot over there.
But sometimes those spots that you ignore and you overlook, those are the spots where you'll find big antlers,
and that's what keeps me up at night.
Yep, it does. Because I guarantee, you know, if I pick up 55 sheds in a year, I bet I've walked past 25.
Really? How what's your best year?
I think it was 83 or 87. But that was with a trip out to South Dakota too. So
right. That's still that amazing for a very squirrel prominent area. Hey, so if anyone's ever seen the shirt we did, the effing squirrel patch shirts, that's Dana Pace right here.
That's me.
It even says your name on the shirt, I'm pretty sure. So,
yep.
Which maybe we'll bring those back. Maybe we'll bring like a revised version of those shirts back.
I'm going to need another one because I've wore mine out.
Okay. We'll have to get on it and make like a... So the I thought the design was cool.
So did I.
But a little in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could maybe reword it a little bit and... Well, no.
We have to do effing.
Yeah.
Like F apostrophe shed antler.
Yeah.
And then a squirrel.
Yeah.
And then a patch.
Let's do it.
We'll figure it out.
Yep.
So that's coming now on the fly. So, I mean, so 88?
I think it was 83 or 87. I can't remember. It was a big year.
Yeah.
Mixed with mule deer and whitetail sheds.
Yeah. But, so you went west just to shed hunt, which is cool.
It was cool. We only got to put in a day and a half because we got hit by snow. And we all know shed hunting fresh snow, it's just...
Especially out there, a lot of those sheds are bleached more white because they're in the open.
Yeah, it was pretty cool because you just find where the deer bed And if you find where the deer bed, you're going to find antlers fresh and old. You know, I picked up an antler out there. I swear it was, I think God put it there when he created Earth. It was just that old.
All dried up and everything. So that leads in. So 80, I always remember, and maybe I'm making this up, but I remember you saying your goal every year is 80 and 80 inch.
It is 80 and an 80 inch. And, okay, I haven't, you know, competition's getting stiff. There's a lot of people that shed hunt now. And
Matt Ranello was right. we won't get into that.
No, I could say a few things, but
yeah, we won't. We'll save that for our other series.
Yep. But as far as the 80 inch club, you know, I've been pretty fortunate the last 3 years that I've picked up 4 80 inch sheds.
The biggest two of them set of 8 point sheds I've ever seen, I think.
Two of them were in the 90s. Two of the sheds were.
Yeah.
That property, I'm just super fortunate to be able to walk. And, you know, it's.
You can't hunt it, but you can walk it.
I can. I hunt late season.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. I can't, like, I'm not buck hunting. I can go in there and doe hunt.
Mm-hmm.
But he gives me permission to shed hunt every year. And then part of the deal is if, you know, he has a couple specific deer that he wants the sheds to that he would like them back. And, you know, it's worth it to me. You know, I'm giving up some big sheds, but I also pick up a lot of sheds out there. So
let me throw something at you. So you care about shed antlers more than the next guy generally.
I would say, yeah.
Some of those big sheds that you've given back or maybe like found for certain, a guy who killed a buck or whatever the unique circumstance might be. Have you ever thought about asking him to do like a replica?
I have, I would have to find the right person to do the replica because replicas are kind of expensive, you know.
We got a guy.
Yeah, I would probably.
We can exchange some numbers here.
I would probably be interested in that because, you know, the first time that I hit the 80 inch club was a side by side set, and I'll share some pictures with you later so you can share that. But it was super cool. I thought he was dead. I thought I walked up on him.
Oh, yeah.
I had made my north-south route on through when I was cutting through. It was more like east-west to keep the sun at my back. And when I was making my turn to come back, I had walked within 75 yards of these sheds, but I hadn't seen it because the sun wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, it was like the Red Sea opening. You know, I could see those sheds from like 80 yards away. But when I seen it, I thought it was a rib cage and a half of a rack that I could see.
That's how big this deer is.
It's big. It's really big. And the closer I got, you know, I was on the phone with my buddy and I was like, I was flipping out. And I wish I had a recording of that conversation, but He was over on the other side of the farm.
Oh, he's out hunting, shedding.
Yeah, he was with me. We had went together, and he was probably, this is a big farm. It's a really big farm. But as the crow flies, he was probably a little over a mile from me.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably only took 10 minutes from him getting that call and then making it to where I was.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Just covering ground.
He's like, don't touch him. I want to see him before you pick him up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something to that with shed hunting. Like
it is.
See it, how they laid naturally and haven't been tinkered with.
Exactly. I take a picture of everyone before I pick it up. That way I have it logged, you know.
Yeah.
I can pick up every shed that I have in my pile and tell you where I found it, what year it was, you know.
That's cool too.
It is.
Do you ever take photos from certain angles to get like, to practice looking for antlers by looking at a photo?
I have not, but that's not a bad idea.
Keep your eyes sharp. Yep. I don't know. I'm making stuff up on the fly when it comes to that.
I keep my eyes pretty sharp.
Yeah.
I look at antlers every day of my life, so, carving.
Yeah. Great segue. So you also, not only do you love finding shed antlers, you are an incredible artist. Man, we've done giveaways for your carvings, and I don't really even know where to like just break it down what you do because your signature is what's right here in front of us, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, I dabble in a lot of different stuff. This year, after I started carving in 1999, and this past year in 2021 was the first year that I had actually purchased a big boy carving machine.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I had used a Dremel just the big fat handheld Dremel
yeah.
for 20 years. And the difference in detail and everything that I get out of a handheld pen style stylus
yeah, gotcha.
Type carver that I have now, it's basically like dentistry tools.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Just more intricate.
Very intricate. And you can get bits for it that are like jewelry engraving mm-hmm. bits, and you just get way finer detail.
So like your stuff is incredible. We'll show a bunch of your artwork here. How did you like learn it? Were you always an artist? Could you always draw or something like that?
Yes. I was an artist all the way through high school. And my art teacher he kept on me a lot, knew that I had some talent there, but mm-hmm. you know, I never thought I would ever pursue it. And I think that I've told the story on the WCB podcast where I got into it because we had went to a mushroom hunting contest in, I think it was Vidalia, Illinois. Anyways, they had a guy there that was carving mushroom sticks, walking sticks.
Yeah.
And I looked at him, I was like, look like crap, you know.
I have one in here somewhere.
It's
not of that guy's, of somebody else's.
I would say they're kind of phallic, and you know,
yeah.
But anyways, I went home, and I had my wife's grandpa had passed away the year before, and he left me a Dremel, or mm-hmm. they gave me a Dremel when he passed away, and the first time that I started carving was on the front porch mm-hmm. of a little duplex apartment that we lived in.
Just bone dust yeah. flying everywhere.
It was actually wood to begin with. Oh, gotcha. I started with wood. I had a junk mulberry tree that was growing out of like a tire in the backyard.
Yeah.
It was a pretty rundown place, but so I cut that mulberry tree down, and that soft wood, I carved it for about 2 hours to get it right, and then I've been doing it ever since. I kind of went to doing antlers in around 2005.
Oh, really?
Yep. So I...
Because you're always a deer hunter. I mean, you killed, a monster back then in the day, right?
Yeah, in 97, shot at 204.
So, yeah, which is insane.
Yep.
How old were you? We don't got to get into details.
I was 18.
I was 7. So you're an OG, yep. I guess you could say.
I had just graduated high school that year.
Uh-huh.
And I had shot that deer, but... Yeah, so in like 2005, I kind of went to starting to carve antler because it stunk less. There was less smoke.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say like it was safer because I'm not sure how good antler dust is for you, but you know.
It's probably not great.
It's probably not great. So like the first 5 or 6 years, I went without wearing a mask, just a fan blowing on me, right. Trying to keep that dust out of my face. But, yeah. I've came a long way. Hopefully I'm a little healthier.
Right, yeah, no kidding. It's all the bone dust is filtered out of you. What are those things called where you squirt in your nostrils to clean out your sinuses?
The
whatever pot or whatever.
Yeah, the neti pot.
Neti pot, yeah. You just got to do that on the daily to get bone dust out of your nostrils.
I thought I was going to get ripped after they came out with all that, the deer antler spray.
Oh, yeah.
The deer velvet spray where they were... Guys were replacing steroids with deer velvet spray.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh man, I'm just going to eat handfuls of this.
Just all jacked up on it.
Didn't work.
No. That's all. Well, dude, I mean, your artwork is incredible. Like, I know people without seeing them, I mean, they're going to see overlays and we're going to show some video footage, but it's easy to think, oh yeah, an antler carving. Like, okay, what could that be? But the stuff you do is like next level. I mean, you have like some of your morel mushroom carvings here, like all the way to ornaments. One of my favorite things that you've done, you did the Halloween like decorations. It's like the skull out of like an antler burr.
Yep. The scarecrows. I kind of like go with the season now just because I can keep product moving.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't burn out.
Yeah.
So
not only that's like, it's a good reason. Like if somebody's wife is going to buy house decorations, like get them out of here.
It's way cooler, you know?
Yeah. And if you have a lot of shed antlers and mounts, it kind of fits the theme of your home anyway.
Oh yeah, definitely. I carve, I would say about 300 to 350 carvings a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not all small like this. They range from this size all the way up to moose paddle sceneries. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's
and
just,
another thing you do, you made one for me out of the buck I killed creepy. He's really unique. I don't have it here because I don't want some drunk idiot to break it. So I have it at home sitting on my desk. And it's like an exact replica of the antler of the buck I shot. Yep. Out of antler.
Out of antler.
Which is incredible.
Yep. Mini sheds, they probably still sell pretty good, but, mm-hmm. you know, you get tired of doing the same thing over and over again. Yeah. I like something to keep me creative.
Right.
You know, so if I, that's why I change from season to season, so that I have something new to do all the time.
Yeah.
That way, you know, I can create new things and people, you know, it keeps people being repeat customers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got guys that probably own 30, 40 carvings of mine.
Yeah.
Yep. It's pretty cool.
That is cool, man. I mean, they're like originals. Or it's like you're an artist, yeah. man. It's you're owning pieces of art. Like
everything's different.
Isabel Bloom was a popular thing in our area because I think it's based out of the Quad Cities, right?
Yes, it is.
But Isabel Bloom ain't got nothing on a Dana Pace antler carving.
No.
Way cooler. So if not, I know that you're busy with orders. You don't really need more orders. But if someone wants to follow you just in case an order opens up, like what page can they follow you for this?
So on Facebook, it's Antler Ridge Carvings. And then Facebook doesn't really get much traffic anymore.
Now, Facebook sucks.
It does. on Instagram, it's antler_ridge_carvings. And I've got a whole page of most of the stuff that I do. I don't post everything that I do. But like if I, you know, a new style product that I do or comes out, I post it and mm-hmm. I've got different versions of it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're interested, you basically just give me a message and then I can send you a bunch of pictures that are along the line of something that you're interested in.
Right, right.
But
that's awesome, man. I love it. I think it's like one of the coolest things.
Thank you.
Anything art is neat. Like, you know, Chancey does like those turkey amazing, feather paintings.
Amazing feathers.
It's incredible. And like, we're fortunate enough to like know awesome people in the outdoor space that are really creative and do woodworking or carvings or like yep. 3D printing.
Yeah.
You brought a bunch of like awesome, like real 3D printed WCB antler logos with the mic as the brow tine. That's like just the stuff that people can do is incredible. Yeah, so
just blows my mind. I mean, I'm by far, there's guys that I look up to in the antler carving world, and I'm probably not even in the same league that they are. But mm-hmm.
is it a pretty big industry, like bigger than someone would think?
I wouldn't say
or community. I guess I wouldn't know if it's an industry, but
I don't think it's huge. But you got your guys on there that are like the A game.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm the C level.
Really?
Yeah. There's some guys out there that do some really crazy stuff.
Really? I never even thought. I didn't even, like, I, you know, I'm sure I've seen antler carvings, but before getting to know you and, like, getting to, like, handle your carvings and see what you can do, I didn't know it was possible to do, like, a replica of an antler out of antler. I never would have thought that'd be possible because I would think for how intricate it gets, I would think it would get brittle.
There's, so, you know, like, the center part of a deer antler is pretty porous.
Yeah.
The center of a mule deer and an elk antler is even way more porous.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's on a elk antler and a mule deer antler. I don't know if it's just like the food that they eat or the nutrition that they have, but mm-hmm. like
sage,
there's pretty much
probably
there's like only maybe an eighth to a quarter inch of actual hard antler on a mule deer.
I guess I didn't realize
or that. Elk antler.
I feel like an elk would be like the best
antler you could would, get. But it's not. Moose is the best as far as density.
Yeah, down, swamp. That makes sense, right?
Right?
High swamp.
The paddle swamp. The paddle part, not so much, but when you get down into the bases where it starts to split off into their fronts or whatever they are, that's really hard carving antler.
And I wonder if that's just because it's such a big animal that has to be like strong to hold what it does, plus hold a fight versus two big bulls.
Moose sheds are heavy. Even the small ones are heavy.
Right.
You know, I don't know how bad I'd want to pack those out.
Well, you know what was interesting? Now that you say this, when the Whitetail Adrenaline crew was in the studio, they had Tanner's three giant muleys that he shot. Yep.
Super light, probably.
Really, one of them was heavy, like pretty like dense, like a whitetail feeling. And the other two were like almost like, you know, when you find a deadhead that's just been laid out in the sun, he's dry.
Or like a EHD or something that had died early in velvet.
Yeah.
There's like no weight
feel to it.
Yeah, I don't.
It's weird.
It almost like it's not done growing when it goes hard horn.
Yeah, it's like it got to its full potential, but it didn't harden all the way through or something weird.
Yeah, it's weird. And they stink too. I mean, antler stinks anyways, but mule deer and elk,
They stink more?
They stink more because of that super porous.
Interesting. I never even thought of that.
I cut into whitetail antlers that still have blood inside the marrow or whatever it is, the porous part of the antler.
No kidding.
Yeah.
It's, naturally shed?
It's pink, runny, liquid blood.
Runny, yeah. Liquid?
Yeah, it's crazy. Some of the stuff is... And
what?
These sheds have been laying in a pile. Like, it's not like full on dripping blood.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But
yeah.
It's like, it looks like if you were to cut a deer leg open right now.
Yeah.
And the marrow inside was pink.
The fleshy look.
Yep. That's what it looks like inside deer antler.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I never even thought that's a possibility.
Super crazy. I'll have to take a picture and show it to you when I get one.
Yeah, because I never even thought. I just figured all dry, you know what I mean? Just yep. Sitting there. Wow, that blows my mind. I never even thought of that. I didn't think that was possible.
It's from handling lots and lots of antlers a year.
Right. I mean, how many in out of 100, how many are like that, you think?
One or two.
Oh, it's really
yeah,
real rare.
Yeah, I think it's the fresher antlers, you know, that I cut up. And I've cut up some very big antlers for people. And it
just wants to make you cringe?
Bigger than these.
How often, okay, this is going to be a fun question because I get asked this a lot. Ring, ring. Hello, Dana Pace. Hey, Dana, I needed some dog chews for my terrier.
I'm not your guy.
Wrong guy to call.
The most questions that I get like that are, what do you do with those? Do you think dogs would like them? Do you think you have enough for my dogs? It's like,
no. Nah.
Yeah, if I had, I give dog chews away to friends, but
it's not a,
that's not my,
you got to call a pet food company for that. Yeah.
That's not my thing.
I get asked that a lot. I'm like, I'm not giving anything.
Nothing.
To your dog. Go buy them for, what are they, like 6 inches long for like $25 or something stupid like that.
Yeah, something stupid.
For a brown one anyway. So let's talk a little bit. So traditional bow hunting. You know, we talked to Shad. He kind of explained his personal journey with traditional hunting. And when Scotty Sullivan was on, he just recently kind of dove into it.
Yep.
But I know you dove into it pretty hardcore the last couple years.
Yeah.
Had you ever before?
I had dabbled in shooting with a friend of mine, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bear Super Kodiak.
Mm-hmm.
And... I was probably hard up for money and I sold it or whatever. I don't know. It's just, you know, when you're doing it by yourself, it's not as fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, and if, you know, my buddy had moved away, so I didn't really have, you know, a mentor or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Not like I do now, you know, I could just get on the phone and text Chad or whoever. And,
we're fortunate to have a good community now.
Very good.
Within WCB.
But, I kind of dove into it hard last year. And it's a, call it, a struggle stick for a reason.
Yeah.
It's not as easy. You know, last year was the first year that I hadn't shot a deer with my bow since I think 97 or 98.
No. Oh, that long.
Yeah.
But man, I mean, it's just a different, it's a different game.
It is very different.
You know, I'm scared. Like I'll do it, but I'm not ready yet.
I feel like to begin with, I was a little too picky, you know,
like picky as in like the deer you wanted to shoot?
No, I would say picky as far as yardages.
Oh, I got you.
Because I wasn't super comfortable. You know, I could shoot a pie plate at 20 yards. You know, that's what, and I just feel like at 20 yards, there's a big margin of error there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to risk wounding a bunch of deer, but
before, you know, sometime, like finally getting the first one
exactly.
With traditional equipment, yeah.
And, you know, this season was actually the first year that I actually drew back on a buck that I wanted to shoot at.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up playing out just like I expected it would be.
Really?
Yeah.
This is when you called me, right?
Yeah, like this is when I called you. My biggest fear, I had rattled in a nice buck. A respectable trad buck, you know, I'd been holding out for a decent one. I didn't want to go shoot, you know.
A shad buck. We say that with all love and respect.
We do.
To Shad. But Shad loves that.
I don't know how many pictures I sent Shad, and he's like, shoot that MRF-er, you know.
it's one of these.
Yeah, it's. I was like, I can't do it. I just can't bring myself to do it.
And I get that. I'd be the same way.
But, you know, I passed up on a lot of chip shots with bucks like that. And rolling into this year, we had, you know, a voluntarily extended leave from work. Mm-hmm. So I was able to put
voluntarily extended leave, yeah. a strike.
I was able to put a lot more hours into trying to make it happen this year. And I'm not the type of guy that goes, like, for some reason, I don't like to go in and shoot my does early. I like to wait till later in the season.
Yeah.
You know, give it a chance to, I mean, even shooting a doe is very hard to do.
Oh, but, yeah. Yeah.
You know, for some reason, that's just the way I like to operate. Well, I passed up on, you know, three or four does already that were within range. And I can't remember the actual date. I would have to look on my phone, but I think it was November 1. I'd gotten a stand. It was a breezy, rainy morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in the stand and I had spooked a deer that was bedded under my stand. It was kind of like in a ditch. And I spooked it towards where the main part of the timber was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I noticed when I got in the stand that the deer had only ran like 70 or 80 yards and came back in, was, you know, checking me out. So I figured that there might be other deer down in there, you know,
because that really spooked. He was like, what was that? And then was curious.
Yeah,
what was that?
So I did a short rattling sequence and I put the horns down, and immediately after I put the horns down, I caught movement down from my right. And I seen that it was a good buck. It was a good enough buck for me to shoot. I'd been waiting for that opportunity. And the deer came in, he was at 17 yards, and the way that I was in a hedge tree,
mm-hmm.
so everything's packed tight, you know, there's so many limbs in there, it takes an hour to cut out a hedge tree yeah. to make a shooting lane.
Yeah.
I was worried about me hitting, with my limbs being so long, I was worried about hitting the branch was coming up basically right to the right of me.
Which is another complication. Like, it's overlooked by compound guys when they go to traditional.
It is, because when I shoot, I cant my bow a little bit. I don't shoot straight up vertical. Like,
you got some swagger with your shooting, which is traditional swagger.
Yeah. Yep. Well, with that, I feel like it kind of forced me to shoot forward a little bit on the deer.
Because
normally I like to aim a little further back, mm-hmm. not right up against that shoulder.
Smart, yeah.
But the deer was standing quartering to a bit, and when I shot, it went forward, and it hit basically the knuckle on a deer's front shoulder, makes mm-hmm. a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
It hit just in front of that knuckle.
Gotcha.
Went through the meat of the neck, and it came out the pocket of the armpit.
Mm-hmm. Which is a good spot to come out.
It's a good spot to come out. You know, I feel like you get one, the front of a lung there.
Yeah, yeah.
Depending on what the angle is.
Mm-hmm.
And is either, after the initial shot and replaying it in my mind, I knew where I'd hit that deer. It was either going to be dead within 50 yards because you got the carotid there. You know, if it took out the front of the heart.
Yep. There's a lot going on up there.
The jugular, you know. All that in there, there's a lot going on where you could kill a deer instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But if I didn't, then there's a chance that the deer could either live or...
I got one lung.
Yeah, one lung type deal. And, you know, we've all seen or heard stories about one lung deer living a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, I've personally had one live a month and shot him a month later.
That's insane to
me. It's crazy.
Absolutely insane.
But, yeah, so... I sat in the stand for about an hour and a half, decided to go down and look at my arrow, and there was good, decent blood on the arrow with it being raining,
mm-hmm.
and I was using a single bevel broadhead, so those are basically made to spiral through a deer as they're going through. It spins mm-hmm. as it's going through the deer, and right off the bat, there was a ton of blood.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, this is a good sign.
Money, yeah, yeah.
This is a good sign. I tracked him about
17 yards too.
Yep. And I would say within 10 yards, he was bleeding good.
Mm-hmm.
And I tracked him into a hedge ditch, and he was going 5-10 yards, stopping, big pools of blood with bubbles in the middle of it. I was like, good, I got one lung. I hit one lung at least. I mean, we're not talking about little spotty bubbles. We're talking about froth.
Frothy
blood,
yeah,
in the puddles.
Confidence boosters.
Usually. Very confident. Very. I was very confident going into finding that deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up tracking him to his first bed about 70 yards later, and then to another bed, and then to another bed. So I backed out,
mm-hmm,
made some phone calls. I had talked to you.
Yeah, we analyzed and talked for a while trying to figure out.
I was like, hey, there's this is the blood that I have. This is the sign that I have. And long story short,
DeerCast Track is a valuable tool.
I was actually looking at DeerCast Track, trying to figure out, you know, that's a tough shot to try to figure out, you know, what to do afterwards.
Yeah.
So I decided to give him time. I had to run into town, pick up my check, my strike check.
Right. Need that.
Need that. And then went and got some lunch. And this was probably about 4 hours, 5 hours after the shot. Went back in there, tracked him through basically the whole property. I was, mm-hmm, like, oh, this ain't good. Backed out again, went back the next morning, tracked him through the same ditch twice. He basically did a big circle in the CRP and came back to go back to the cover.
Yeah.
And so basically I went through the ditch, followed him through, and his tracks came back through that ditch to go back into that hedge draw that I was hunting in.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost blood after 2 days and a day of raining. There was good blood the whole way. I mean, man, it was super easy to follow.
And then we were talking during this. I'm like, how the hell the deer with like putting out that much blood, that frothy, like what the heck?
It was crazy. I mean, but deer have such a will to live that it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Dude, if it was us, I'd have been killed over within 50.
Right.
I would go 20. I would have been laying up.
I wouldn't have gone 20 myself.
Yeah. Right.
But, yeah.
By the way, we're not making light of the situation. It
sucks. You know, I was bummed. My first deer that I had drew back on, my first buck that I had drew back on with the longbow. And,
yeah,
you know, I worked hard for that. You know, it's, mm-hmm, it's extremely hard to practice every day, trying to get your form down, your release down. And I felt money when I drew back.
Mm-hmm.
The release looked good. You can see on the video that I had showed you, arrow flight was awesome. I was just a little far forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, mistakes happen. I can't take it back. But you know, I ended up not finding the deer the next couple days.
Mm-hmm.
I had the landowner keep an eye out for crows and, you know, eagles. There's a lot of eagles in this area. And, you know, we came up short,
which still is like crazy.
It is with all the blood and the sign and everybody that I had talked to. And, you know, it's just, I don't know how that broadhead made it through there with all that blood and not hit
an artery or
hit the goods.
Yeah.
But so I ended up not finding the deer. Fast forward 2 months, almost, it was, mm-hmm, my Christmas break from work.
Mm-hmm. After the strike,
it was our first snowfall of the year. And me and my buddy, Brock Krantz, was heading into hunt our food plot.
Mm-hmm.
And, we took a different route this time because I felt like we were bumping deer. Mm-hmm. They weren't coming into the plot until.
So before going this alternative route, I mean, you're still thinking about this buck because it's like, no other trail cam pictures probably.
Disappeared. I hadn't had any. I think I had one trail cam picture of this deer before I killed him. That's it.
Oh,
and
really?
I think it was that day.
So, yeah, not a homebody to where not you're at.
Nope. It was
his home wasn't there, I guess. It's,
yeah, he was just likely there for does.
Yeah.
But, in my mind, you know, I was like, that deer, I thought that he went on the neighbors,
mm-hmm,
from where I last lost blood. And I flagged them down on the road, asked them if I can go in there. And they were like, "Yeah, we'd rather you not."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Thanks.
I was like,
thanks.
Thanks. Well, it was on the, I was coming out of the property, and I seen them on the road come out of their drive, so I just flagged them down.
Yeah. Being neighborly, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, hey, this is what happened. The deer was headed your way. You know, you got a small chunk, sliver of timber. You mind if I check it? And they're like, yeah, we'd rather you not.
Are they hunters?
They're just, no, they weren't. They were probably in their mid-70s.
Hmm.
And I don't know, they just would rather have
jars of change buried back there. They don't want you to find them.
Exactly.
Okay. Makes sense.
So, like I said, fast forward 2 months, we took an alternate route into the blind, and it took us up that ditch that I was telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
And
the hedgy ditch.
This is like a willow ditch that leads to the hedgy ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And, as we were going up the hill, I looked down into the bottom and I seen a rib cage, and the contrast with the snow made it stick out.
Yeah.
I'd probably walked by that deer. I don't know how many times. Within 50 yards of it, probably.
Fudge.
But I know that deer wasn't laying there dead when I had tracked him through there.
Wonder if he just was like, got up and then came back. And
yep. That's the only thing. Or maybe he lived a couple days longer.
Right. And that. So when you saw that, were you like, that's my buck?
When I saw it, it was just a wrapped up pile of ribs. I couldn't see an antler.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my buddy Brock, I was like, yeah, I think it's a doe. Well, let's just go ahead and go to the blind.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, go check it out. And I went down there.
Shout out to Brock.
Yeah. underneath the rib cage was the rack. The rack was sticking out.
Just wrapped up.
Wrapped up. It was wrapped up into a ball. I don't know if the coyotes just flipped it up over on each. On
They're
itself,
out to get our crew this year.
They
man.
Are. They are.
Or were. We're going to put the hurting on them.
We got to. I got plenty of coyotes to shoot.
Yeah, we
got to
do it.
We got to. But yeah, it was him.
Oh, man, sigh of relief a little, but like still a bummer.
Bittersweet.
Bittersweet.
You know, I was super, super happy that, you know, I finally accomplished. The weight was off of my shoulders of shooting a deer.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted a new challenge. I had shot a lot of good deer with my compound, and I wanted to change things up a little bit, and I went full in, and you know, it's you're bummed when something like that happens. You put all that work into it, you know, and
money and time and time
it
away.
It was a lot, you know,
time away from work.
It kind of put a bad taste in my mouth about it, you know.
Yeah.
Am I doing the right thing?
Yeah.
But in the end, I'm super happy that it happened the way it did, and it'll make me work harder in the future.
So that all that being said, you know, happy ending, which we could pull this buck up here. Is trad something you're going to be? Are you going to be strictly traditional from here on out for a while, or are you going to dance like Chandler does? Or
I'm going to dance because first of all, I'm a killer. Mm-hmm. I like to kill.
It's fun.
I like to kill deer.
Hey, it's fun, dude, and there's nothing wrong with saying it's a good time.
I don't mind dabbling in both. I sold my Elite, sold everything with it.
Real bold.
And went strictly trad, and then in December I bought a new Elite because I hadn't killed anything yet, and I hadn't found, actually the first hunt with the Elite, I found this.
Oh, really?
That was the very first hunt with the Elite, and
so it's like a good omen to like have it.
It was
have it around, yeah.
So I literally, and then the last day of season, I shot a doe with my Elite, so I was back to killing.
Yeah, you're back in it, back in the game, dude. That's an awesome buck. He's cool. He's so dark, and he's busted up sucker.
Oh yeah, he's a fighter.
I would have been all over that man with a longbow or a recurve. You know, it's something I want to do. It's something I think about doing often. It really is.
It's a blast. And learning during the summer when you're in your downtime, that's the best time to do it. You know, not just jumping into it during the deer season.
Plus your whole family kind of dabbles with it when you're at the shoot and stuff like that. It's cool to see.
My son shoots trad. Is trad the right word to use?
I think people who are actually
traditional
hunting hate the word trad.
Okay.
It's just easier.
It is easier, but
it's internet slang, so it probably drives real traditional bow hunting guys nuts.
It probably
does. I can see that. I respect that.
You know, I'm an adult onset trad hunter, so
right.
But yeah, I mean, my whole family, except for Taylor shoots compound still, but
she's smart. I'm just kidding.
Everybody else, everybody else shoots their recurves and longbows. Yeah. We have a blast. You know, it's...
Yeah.
It.
What's Shad say? It's the most fun you can have missing?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Literally is. It's a blast. You know...
By the way,
we just need to do it.
If you come out to the Working Class Bowhunter Shoot in June 11th at Galesburg Archery Club in Rio. Is it Rio or Rio? It's Rio.
Rio?
I think it's Rio. Shad is bringing a bunch of his traditional bows. Yep, so if you want to try it, you can come out and just mess around and he'll
exactly,
let you shoot.
And the rest of us will have our stuff out there.
Yep.
We have no problem with you guys shooting it. It's a blast. You know,
it is fun.
It's, heck, take one through the course.
I have one. I actually have a recurve.
I've seen it.
It's an old school one.
Yep.
But it's nice. It's been like refurbished and stuff.
You just got to do it. You got
to. I might bring it to the shoot, but man, I don't know. That's not probably the one I'd want to hunt with. That's a good practice to. That's like a gateway bow.
Yep.
That makes any sense at all.
It does.
I talked to Jared Scheffler about it. Like we had like a one on one here in our bar green room at the studio, and he's like, "What do you think? You think you'll ever dive into it?" I'm like, "Yes, I will." I actually talked to my wife about this today too. I will do it. But there's certain boxes and things I want to do before I feel like I want to like start that journey. Cause when I start that journey, I want to dedicate to the journey.
Yep. So. I mean, like I was telling you earlier, you know, it was as far as whitetails go, I think I've accomplished what I've wanted to accomplish with those.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I changed it up a little bit. Not to mention it was a little pushing from Shad. Mm-hmm. He's
an influence man.
He is. He's like, here, you know what? If you promise to hunt with this bow, I'll give you a bow to borrow, and you just got to take it. You got to take it to the woods. Promise me you'll hunt with it. It deserves to be in the woods. And after that, I love shooting the thing. I spend hours every night shooting that thing.
Yeah. Do you still have that bow?
No, I gave it back to him. At the shoot.
Mm.
So I basically borrowed it for a year.
Rented it.
You actually brought it back from Indiana for me.
You're right. Yep.
Yep.
I forget a lot of things that I do.
You got a lot of stuff going on.
Hey, we try to stay busy.
When you're hustling, you can't remember. You can't remember it all.
You're shed hunting. You're carving antlers. You're on strike. You're killing deer. Hey,
you got to stay busy.
We're busy.
We are.
Well, I appreciate you coming in and bringing all these monster sheds and sharing the shed hunting tips and telling your carving story and telling your first traditional buck story with us.
It was my pleasure. It was a great time.
The true ups and downs of bow hunting, I think, is what encompasses traditional bow hunting.
Yeah.
Which what makes it hunting in general, it's not easy. So it makes it that much sweeter when you find success or you're successful in whatever you're trying to do.
Yep.
Whether it's kill a deer or whatever it might be or not. If it was easy, it wouldn't be as rewarding.
Nope. I think more people would be doing it if it was that easy.
Yeah, I think so, but I think you wouldn't have the guys like us and everyone here on DeerCast that dedicate their time and passion and money and time off work and all this into something that was willy-nilly.
I get 4 weeks of vacation a year and 3 weeks of it's for hunting.
Yeah, that's most guys, man. Yeah. That's what DeerCast is beautiful for. This platform is amazing, and it can help guys kind of pinpoint when they should take those precious days off to kill a whitetail or find a shed antler or do whatever it is that you love. So, well, cool, man. You want to plug any Instagram or Facebook page or anything? I know you did the Antler Ridge plug, but.
Yep. Maybe I could plug my daughter's Instagram photography page. Yeah,
she's in here taking photos of us podcasting. If you hear a shutter in the background, that's what's going on. We're trying to look good in here.
Her page is Taylor Pace Photography on Instagram. And, awesome. If you want to give it a follow, go ahead. But other than that, just if you're out there shed hunting, always remember to keep the sun at your back.
Keep the sun at your back. I like it. We'll close her there. Thanks, everyone, for listening and watching. If you're not watching this series, get in DeerCast. Give us a like. Give us some comments on this series. Tell us what you want next. We're doing these weekly. So if you got an idea, a topic you want us to cover, let us know. And you know what to do. Go shoot a giant. We love you. Thanks for listening or watching this episode of Working Class on DeerCast. I'm doing this in replace of this week's Giant Tracker segment. I kind of just wanted to put something out to DeerCast users or the Working Class Bowhunter family. The Giant Tracker segment's a ton of fun, and we're still going to keep doing that. But I figure it'd be kind of a cool thing to open it up to some of the fan share segments on DeerCast, or if you guys just have some cool stories that you'd like to share that we could throw on and as a segment at the end of some of these episodes, it'd kind of be a fun interactive thing we could do. So if this interests you, throw some comments in on DeerCast on these episodes, and we'll just be going through them at random and trying to just get some good stories out there and interacting with you guys, and most importantly, just having a good time with what we're doing here. So we appreciate all the support. Jump on there, just comment, like, share, you know, that helps us out doing this. We're having a good time, so hopefully we'll be talking to you on a future episode of Working Class on DeerCast. You know what to do, go shoot a giant. Thanks, guys.
Miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.